Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spesh.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Going fantastic.
It is hot outside.
I think the... so, yes, it's hot.
I was sweating cutting carrots.
But the problem is, it's not that it's hot. It's that it came on suddenly. So we didn't get to acclimate to it.
It's not the heat as it is the humidity.
Nah, it's not just that, too. It's normally we can acclimate. We get used to it. By about August, it's like, yeah, well, whatever, 30, 33
starts
degrees.
Starts in June, ends in August.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, by August, we're acclimating.
And I saw, so what's the date today, 24? Yes.
Yes.
We're recording on the
24th.
So on the 22nd, in some of the higher passes in the Rockies, they got like 6-8 inches of snow.
See? I saw a thing today. Chance of snow, none. And it's in blue. Chance of snow, still none, just in darker blue. And it was for this, I think, for this area.
Yeah, definitely for this area.
Yeah, just all of a sudden this heat wave came on, and you're like, ugh.
Yeah. And the problem with the heat wave, which we're going to talk a bit about later, but the problem with the heat wave is cause all these weird temperature inversions, and the planet reacts to these heat waves, and so you get winds, and it can be very destructive. Anytime there's a heat wave, I always worry, oh, am I going to lose my roof?
And then you have anybody that knows the 401 in Toronto.
Hmm.
You have all these lanes of traffic, and then someone in a big 18-wheeler decides in the middle of the day, I'm going to roll this bad boy, and cuts off half the lanes of traffic. So there's all these people trying to get home, merging.
Did that happen to you today?
No, yesterday.
Was it?
Yeah, there was a rollover on the 401 there by White's Road, and then all these people are doing 10 kilometers an hour. So you're sitting there in all that heat for an hour. Ugh. And you get home and you're like walking because your pants are sticking to you.
Is your air conditioner broken again in your truck?
No, I just don't like using the air conditioning.
Wow.
I prefer my windows open. But.
Well, that's a you problem then.
That is a you problem. But still, even still.
So when it comes to stuff like this, and it comes to the heat, comes to the change, weird weather, and you get weird dumps of rain, like insane amounts of rain. And so you think, you know, like you said, you know, the roads get blocked, somebody has an accident. So we need to get more traffic passed, right? So, you know, there's the 407, the 401. And so with the Don Valley that floods a couple times a year, every year, and in all the intelligence that a politician can come up with, not doubling the width of a transfer of the 401, he's going to double it, but he's going to go vertical. So he wants to put a tunnel into the 401.
What a wiener.
And so can you imagine all the people that would die if that floods?
Right?
So you get a blackout and
rain.
Wasn't
there a movie about that?
I'm sure there had to have been.
Wasn't the Dwayne the Rock Johnson movie or something?
Sharknado?
No, what was it? 24 Hours Midnight or something? I don't know. Yeah? But yeah, something about the tunnel collapses or something and people are trapped in there. And a wiener.
I know. It just seems so ill-advised.
Yeah. Good times. These are the good times.
Yeah. Mid-afternoon today. I heard all the rumbling, and it's like I look out the window. It's like, it looks really nice. What do I hear? There was a wicked thunder and lightning storm over Lake Ontario. I could see it south of us. It's like, whoa.
Well, it rained north of us.
Did it rain north of us?
Apparently.
So I saw southeast of us. So I think, it would have been up right along the Port Hope Coburg. So I think I know somebody who might get caught in that.
Dun, dun, dun. So good times, but yeah, I don't mind the heat, but when the humidity kicks in, and when you're standing there cutting carrots and you're covered in this sheen of sweat, you're like, oh. So I got home tonight and I turned the air conditioning. I usually don't turn the air conditioning on till at least mid-July.
Okay.
I turned it on tonight just to make sure it's working.
Yeah.
Because, you know, well, you got the dog and the cats as well.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know what? If we're gone, then at least they're going to be comfortable.
Yeah.
So. things I do for those animals. But yeah, like I said, you would swear I ran a marathon.
Oh, yeah?
And then came home and the finish line was cutting carrots. It was I'm a triathlete.
Yeah.
I run, walk the dog, and cut carrots. Woo! Yeah, it was bad, but what are you going to do? Tis the season. And then 5 months from now, we're all going to be bitching that it's too cold. Oh, there's just no pleasing us.
I know. What are you going to do? We got nothing else. We got nothing else to complain about, right?
Yep. If that's the worst,
yeah.
Then how bad can it be? We got a few things to talk about here. Some of it good, some of it bad, some of it meh. So let's start with the good stuff.
Yes. And I'm taking advantage of this one.
Canada Strong Pass. Anybody that wants to come to Canada. This summer, plan a vacation in Canada from June 20th, last weekend, to September 2nd, 2025. Enjoy free or discounted admission to some of the country's most iconic places. The Canada Strong Pass lets you explore the richness of the country, from museums to nature to railroads. Canada Strong Pass is not a physical pass that you need to purchase, sign up for, or collect. Simply visit any participating Parks Canada site. That's the important part, Parks Canada.
Yes.
Not Ontario Parks or anything like that. Parks Canada. Site, museum, gallery, or via rail to benefit from free admissions or discounts. And I will say that when they're talking about ages, they mean actual ages, not your mentality age. Because some days...
some days, I don't act a lot older than 12.
I'm getting in for free. As part of the Canada Strong Pass, the government of Canada is offering free admission to places operated by Parks Canada from June 20th to September 2nd, 2025, inclusive. No fees apply for admission for all visitors to all national historic sites, national parks, and national marine conservation areas operated by Parks Canada. So they're not like saying, well, you got to be a Canadian citizen or anything. Anybody that's having a vacation in Canada can take advantage
yes,
of it.
Yes, even if it's a tourist.
Yeah.
If you're in from the States, you're in from overseas.
And if you're boating... Lockage at canals administered by Parks Canada and historic waterways.
Which is the Trent Severn.
Right, is a freebie, which is nice. Fees still apply for camping and other accommodations, reservations, Canadian Rockies hot springs, mooring, guided tours, hikes programs, not usually included with admission. So, hey, pay $12 for admission. Hikes are, guided hikes are extra.
Yeah.
Still extra. Services provided by third parties, fishing licenses, firewood, parking permits, like research and drone use. It's not an exhaustive list, but check with your location. You plan to visit for more details. And again, free admission only applies to places operated by and for Parks Canada.
So not provincial parks.
Right. Discovery passes and annual single location passes are normally valid for 12 months from the date of purchase. If you have a Parks Canada Discovery Pass or annual single location pass valid for June, July, and August, Parks Canada will automatically extend the pass for an additional 3 months. For example, the pass has an originally expiry date of July 2025, will now expire in October 2025. No action is required to get the extension.
Yeah, there's no pass or needed, or there's no, you just walk up to any of these national historic sites or anything like that, and it's just free access. Yep.
Let me
so in. You don't need a special pass. You don't need to register for it. And so if for anybody's coming to visit Canada, they want to check out some of the stuff, like, granted, you're not the big money is flying into Canada if you're going to come to see our National Historic Sites. So this is it's a perk because you're not saving a lot of money. You're still spending a lot of money.
If you're a family of four,
sure,
at $20 a pop.
Sure, so you save
$80.
Yeah.
Right?
But what I'm saying is that the grand scheme of things, it's the getting here is going to cost
more expensive. Yeah.
But for anybody who is Canadian traveling within the country, then this is a huge bonus, right?
Right.
To go see. And I would expect you need to watch and maybe call ahead to find out when peak times might be, because you're going to see a lot of these locations are going to be very busy.
Yeah. The same period from June 20th to September 2nd, a discount of 25% will apply to fees for camping and roofed accommodations. Things like tent and RV camping, front country camping, equipped camping, Authentics, microcubes, cabins, yurts, teepees, oasis, historic stays, backcountry overnight stays, all 25% off.
Mm-hmm.
And again, mooring programs not usually included with admission, services provided by third parties, firewood permits and parking are all still regular fees. 25% discount on camping and roofed accommodations did not apply at provincial or territorial parks, CPAC parks in Quebec, municipal or private parks, parks or historic sites not operated by Parks Canada, camping and accommodations operated by third parties. So basically, it says Parks Canada?
Yes.
Stick with that
one. It's got the brown sign.
Right? And go with that. So get out there, go see some touristy stuff in Canada and save a couple bucks. Well, I mean, like I say, if you take a family of four and say it's going to cost you $80 mm-hmm. and you got to drive a little ways, that $80 is gas money.
Yep.
Bingo.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the way I look at it.
And another bonus is via rail, which I didn't know it was a national service, but anyways, via rail is anybody under 17 is free,
mm-hmm.
and anybody that is the age of 17 to 24, 17 to 25 is 25% off.
Yeah.
So this is another bonus. I got some people at work who are taking the train to Montreal and stuff just because, hey, this is cool. This is going to
save some
money.
Cash.
And who doesn't like riding the train? That's fun.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Sheldon. go get your discounts.
Yes.
Do some sightseeing.
Enjoy
this summer.
Some of Canada's national parks and recreational areas.
Get into the park for free. That's awesome.
Very cool.
You remember like day tripping stuff, right?
Yeah. So until recently, because my kids are starting to get older, so they're not as interested. But we also used to get provincial park pass mm-hmm. every year, so we would just show up at parks and just go for hikes because of the
pass. And now they've put in that with Algonquin, you got to register, like pre-book your day pass thing, which,
but that's only during fall colors, I'm pretty sure.
I thought it was all summer long,
and I don't know
because everything books so fast.
Yeah, it is pretty busy.
Yeah, so if you wanted to go for a day trip or something,
yeah,
you gotta register otherwise, because they were only limiting so many people in, right?
Yeah. We also bought a CLOCA pass, which is, what is that? That's Conservation Lands Ontario. So anyways, it's conservation areas.
All the conservation areas in southern Ontario. Yeah. I used to get the parks pass, the Ontario Provincial Parks pass. Not really the national park stuff.
I've never done that.
Yeah, just the Ontario Parks one.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still getting... Yeah. Having to pay.
And you're in Canada's 150. I had no idea. I had no clue. But then when they did the Canada 150, they said, the Trans Severn is free to travel. So I remember getting sticker mm-hmm. from my canoe so we could travel up and down the Trans Severn, go through the locks. And until then, it's like, what? This is a national park thing?
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty wild that, I'm confused as how I did not know that. But I guess it's a nationally run...
What are you, new?
I know, apparently.
Some people's kids. Some people's kids, yeah. I tells you. Speaking of the heat...
Oh, yes.
Tornadoes.
Yeah, and...
So
and
we had heat warnings.
Oh, yeah.
Thunderstorm tornado warnings over the weekend. Woke up Sunday morning to tons of pictures all over social media.
Yeah.
Tornadoes touching down. Algonquin Park. Samuel Champlain Park just north of Algonquin. There was some down in, I think, Minnesota and stuff as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, just this swath of tornadoes touching down.
Exactly. There were strips or bands of bad weather that crossed, like, from the Great Lakes across about North Bay, top of Algonquin Park, where Champlain is, and so on. So there's that. Plus, there was a strip coming off of the lower end of the Great Lakes where really bad weather. Yeah, it's when the natural jet stream and the weather passes naturally from west to east, it picks up the cooler water and it really energizes the storms as it comes across the lakes. And so there's these bands of bad weather that came across to upper U.S. and middle of Ontario, and it was pretty bad. It was significant, like, wind.
They're saying, oh, look, here's a picture of the road that's washed out. That road's not washed out. It's obliterated.
It's gone.
It's gone. Yeah. Like, you would not know there was a road there. Trees down everywhere. I know in Algonquin, the people are showing pictures of the campgrounds. Trucks, trailers.
Crushed.
Tents, just... Yeah, there's this one... I remember seeing one of the first ones is this red pickup truck, hammered. Like, it's going straight to the dump. You know, like, it's going right to the auto wrecker because there's no fixing that much damage.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, write off. Now, originally, I'd heard Samuel de Champlain was so bad it probably won't open again this year. But now I'm hearing maybe a week or more, it'll be back open.
I think initially they thought, oh, we can't recover from this.
Yeah.
But now they're saying, well, I think we can get some people in to remove these trees.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be a lot fewer trees in Samuel de Champlain Provincial Park, but they should be able to clear it up and probably take them a month.
Yeah, I know I've seen people even online, hey, who do I contact if they need help?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, because I guess people are retired. They live up there and they do this on their own property.
I'll do it for the firewood.
I'll go there and help cut up trees and move it, and got nothing better to do.
Mm-hmm.
Algonquin, Bates Island on Opiongo apparently completely flattened. There's no campsites left.
Really?
Yep. Same with a couple other islands on and stuff like that. Like, no islands.
So, I didn't know it was that widespread. So, Opiongo got hit by two.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, it's like the whole...
I had no
From
idea.
One end to the other sort of thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Reports of injuries, some minor, some serious, major. Yeah. There was a story of a mother and her 13-year-old son were camping in the interior way up on North Depot Lake. Rescuers had to come in and evacuate them after their son was injured.
And because the storm was going on, they couldn't initially go in and do an airlift.
Right? Because of the winds and stuff. So rescuers had chopped, paddled, and eventually flew their way into the remote corner of Algonquin Park to reach a 13-year-old boy who was seriously injured when a tree fell on his tent. OPP, Ontario Provincial Police, said a mother and son were camping on North Depot Lake when a tree fell on their tent around 10 p.m. during a strong overnight thunderstorm. Police and said the boy was very seriously injured in the incident. His mother sent out a call for help on one of her devices, which Spot, Garmin, Zaleo.
Yeah, so at best of times, there's no coverage in the park. And then on the edges of the park, services would have been down. So it's another thing. Everybody's carrying these communication satellite devices.
Yeah.
They do come in handy.
Yep. They relayed their location about 25 kilometers from the park entrance where rescuers gathered. They couldn't reach the boy by air because of the bad weather, so rescuers used hand saws to clear roughly a 25-kilometer path through downed trees and other debris until chainsaws arrived from the fire department in Deep River, allowing them to get ATVs through. Team eventually reached water, and rescuers were able to paddle a canoe the final 300 meters to the injured teen and start giving first aid. By 8:30 a.m. Sunday, the Ministry of Natural Resources float plane was able to touch down on the lake and airlift the boy to hospital for treatment. It's a good thing it was a big enough lake to land the plane.
Right? Yeah.
And when it comes to Samuel de Champlain Provincial Park, there is no park anymore. There is no forest there, says Dan Johnson, who, along with his wife, is happy to be alive. two, along with many other campers, were trapped in Samuel de Champlain Provincial Park on Saturday night. I heard they had to evacuate like 290 people at the end of the day.
Yeah, they had to put him into some sort of accommodation.
Yeah, in Mattawa. A couple drove to the park on a week's vacation, planned to stay on their site the entire time, pulled into a waterfront spot, and started to settle in for the week. This was on Saturday. The two had heard reports of bad weather coming into the area, and they expected to deal with a thunderstorm. But what they encountered was much worse and nothing the two could have predicted. Johnson explained, "Our site is destroyed. Our car is destroyed. Our tent is destroyed. Where we were sitting was destroyed. Trees were coming down everywhere." And this is all in the middle of the night, right?
Yeah.
They were not alone. Many were visiting the park that night. Most were trapped. Nobody died, but there were some injuries, including broken limbs. Others injured were taken to Mattawa Hospital by road. Others had to be lifted out by helicopter. Authorities worked fast to get people out. The park is within the Calvin Township's jurisdiction, so its fire crew made it to the park quickly. Soon, firefighters from throughout the region were working to clear the park's roads and return people to safety. Once found, they were bused to Mattawa, where the Red Cross had set up cots in preparation. The number of people who arrived isn't official yet, but some working in the area said there were about 60 families. But yeah, the last number I saw was 290 people had to be evacuated from Samuel de Champlain.
That's a lot of...
And that's just the one part, the one area, right? So everybody's up there camping and stuff like that. And yeah, now that things are starting to make more... Because there's no cell service left. Like people weren't able to get out, like touch base with people and say, hey, here's what's happening. We're okay or whatever. A lot of people had to, like, they've made it to Mattawa or were evacuated and their vehicles and everything are still in the park.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And some of them, they're going to be there. They're going to be towed out. Because they're not drivable.
Yeah, anymore. Exactly. Can you imagine you go in there and you're in your
I mean, we're talking big trees.
Yeah.
Right?
I saw some of the pictures. These are like, you know, 1 and 2 foot diameter trees.
Yeah. Oh, you're telling me about the one lady in the tent.
Yeah.
The ground.
They showed so in the picture you can see the overturned tree ball, the tree root, right next to her tent, about a few inches away. And so you could see, she said during the night, the ground underneath them was lifting up and down as the tree was moving. Eventually the tree fell away from them and lifted them and tossed them in the air because the root ball came
up,
flicked them away, and they were inside their tent, hiding under a table inside their tent. And then the person panned around and every tree you could see, giant trees.
Yeah.
We're all laying flat and you could see that there's a tree was not on the truck, but was like down next to the truck. All the doors of the truck were open. And it was like, ah.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely, you see some of the sites thinking, how did that tree miss? But yeah, then you're seeing here's a view inside our trailer and it's all tree. Like there is no trailer left.
Exactly.
You know, like, could you imagine? So how was your camping trip? Well, I lost my trailer. I lost my truck. I lost
all my camping gear,
my canoes and everything.
And if you're lucky, you didn't lose a family member.
Right.
There's a lot of people injured. They're talking about broken bones and stuff like that. I don't know if anybody died.
I haven't heard of any deaths.
Yeah.
I've heard of some serious injuries, but I haven't heard of any deaths yet. So.
Zoinks.
What a... And like I say, I mean, being in the backcountry.
Yeah.
Now, I have been in the backcountry with my buddy Kevin up on Cedar.
Yeah.
And a few storm cells all converged on Cedar Lake at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And lightning hit the tree, top of the tree next to our tent.
Oh.
And came right down into our tent. We were sitting under the tarp at the time.
Yeah.
And watched it happen. We weren't in the tent.
You were in a tarp outdoors from the tent.
Yeah, so we were like sitting around the fire, waiting for dinner time sort of deal.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we hear this big boom, like scare the crap out of you.
Yeah.
And then you just watch the top of the tree come straight down into the tent.
Yeah, I see stuff like that a lot. And so just on videos. And the lightning will hit the tree and it'll instantly boil all the moisture in the tree. So it, the water in the tree boils faster than the tree can hold it in. So the tree explodes.
Yeah.
And it blows off the top and middle portions of the tree. So did it crush your tent?
It went straight through.
So you didn't have a tent after that?
Sort of. Because we took, I had an extra tarp with me.
Yeah.
So we threw that over top.
Okay. So
while Kevin was in there bailing it out, because it was pissing rain at the same time, right?
Yeah.
So he's bailing it out with a frying pan. And I'm putting a tarp over top. So we had a place to sleep. Everything, I mean, stuff got wet.
Yeah.
But we pulled it. But yeah, that tent no longer is in my possession. We packed up and called it a trip after the next day. But we had talked to Jake Pigeon that, and he's like, I've never seen anything like what happened over Cedar that night.
And when you get, so you think to yourself, well, the trees stand, it should be fine. But trees, if they only see a big storm like that once every 20, 25 years, the tree is not really, it's like human experience. A tree's experience level is how much wind it's been taking, right?
Right.
So if it's a strange wind from a different angle that it's not used to, the trees can't handle that.
No.
And so they get blown down. So they may not have the, they might be rooted in on a hard pan of Canadian shield. And so there's nothing really deep anchoring it. So they blow over, or it's just soft, mulchy ground, mossy ground. So yeah, it's yikes. We, I remember in McGregor Provincial Park a few years back, we were in a tent and we had just chased off some raccoons that were trying to get into our stuff. And then middle of the night, it was like super dead quiet. And I remember waking up a few times listening to see the raccoons were coming back. Nothing. It was dead quiet. So quiet. And then we both woke up and I remember looking at her and Siobhan looked at me and I said, is there a train track near here? I hear a train coming. She goes, I don't think so. And so we were listening as the train got closer and closer and closer. And it was the leading edge of a storm because it was dead quiet. And when that storm hit us, like the tent was moving around us. It was shaking and we heard a loud bang nearby. It's like, I think I just heard a tree come down. And I don't know why I was whispering, but I whispered that to her in the tent. I think I heard a tree come down. Why are you whispering? Shh,
maybe it'll go away.
Anyway, so nothing happened to our site. We did get everything got wet, but not inside the tent. It rained, but we were good. But when we left the tent in the morning, there was a park ranger, a couple park ranger trucks, and some people walking through our neighbor's campsite. A tree had come down between his truck and his little pull RV and just landed on the ground. It didn't hit anything. It just whomped right in the middle of the campsite. Missed everything that they had.
Was he Irish? Because he sure had luck of the Irish on that one.
Yes. Yeah. So it was like, whoa. Yeah. Yeah, it was, you just don't expect it. You go to sleep and you think, you know, the tent will keep the raccoons and the mice out, but you don't think about the tree coming down on top.
Well, I mean, you always look for widowmakers, right?
Yeah. What? Yeah, any dead trees.
I mean, exactly. I mean, what we were camped next to at the time, that's a perfectly strong tree till the lightning hits, you know?
Yeah.
But
another time we were camping, this was just of course it's named after me, but remember the storm front, they call it a Derrico. So it passed through.
That was
through.
A couple years
ago. Was that 2022, I think? 2023. Was it?
Yeah.
Anyway, so when it passed through, we were at Emily, and on the way back, we saw all the devastation along the roads and stuff like that. But we were out for a bike ride. It was a nice, beautiful day, right? And then we felt some wind picking up, and it's like, okay, well, let's continue our trail. It's probably going to rain. So it was raining, and then the hail came, and we were in, like, hiding under trees, and I'm thinking, the hail is hurting us. I could feel it on my shoulders. We can hear the hail bouncing off our bicycle helmets, and we're in the middle of the forest, and it's like, I don't think we should be underneath a tree, but there's a lot of trees, so if there's lightning, I think we're fine. So we're huddling under a tree, and then it passed, and we could see hail everywhere in the grass. And as we're standing there, we could see rain coming down, hail coming down, and thousands of leaves from the trees coming down. We're in like this birch forest. It's like, this is crazy. It was so loud. And then we got when it ended, it passed on by us, and we got back to the main park of Emily, and there was trees down and branches down. We saw somebody with a like this 12-inch branch came off a tree and landed on the guy's roof. It's like, ooh, he didn't look like he was going to be able to open his doors.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, our campsite had some leaves in it, but it was pretty much unscathed. So we had just missed our tent. That's
all you can hope for.
And so it was like, woo. But yeah, the hail was like the size of the tip of your pinky finger. And it came down hard and it hurt. And the kids are screaming. It's like, ah. Hide under the tree.
Grab one of your kids and use them as a shield.
Yes, hold the kid above your head.
Yeah, you can't mess with nature's the weather.
Too big.
And too powerful. You can't always predict it. Sometimes things are going to come, you know, a lot more than is expected, and
you can't predict the severity. Even weather specialists, and you see anything come across the weather network, it's like, oh, we're getting a storm coming through, but you don't know if it's going to miss and be a woof. It's like, well, that was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's going to be, well, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, because we had the last week was, oh, it's going to start thunderstorms.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, there was some wind, but there was no thunderstorms.
Yeah.
Next time, oh, it'll be windy, and then all of a sudden you got hail and thunderstorms and tornadoes and everything. So, well, you know, like as much of a pain in the butt it is that people got to replace their vehicles and trailers and stuff, it's easier to replace a trailer and a truck than it is a life.
Yes, exactly.
So hopefully no one's died like I say, I haven't heard of anybody dying yet, just the injuries and whatnot, and hopefully that's...
Fingers crossed.
Stand-up paddleboard leashes.
When I saw this story come out, I'm like, what?
Yeah. It's a bit misleading whether you should be using them or not.
Yes. It's specific cases.
And it's a specific thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Their state agency is issuing a safety advisory to anyone using stand-up paddleboards at Oregon waterways this spring and summer. Oregon State Marine Board is urging people who recreate on stand-up paddle boards atop moving water.
That's
primarily
the key.
Rivers. That's the key. Always wear a life jacket and never wear a Velcro ankle or leg leash that is designed for general flat water use or surf zone.
There are breakaway leashes that you can get for stand-up paddle boards that are designed to snap off at a certain weight or pull strength, right? So that's if you get entangled.
A waist belt. And
It'll pop off. So in flat, smooth water, it'll stay with you. But if you get entangled in a tree or a rock.
You're toast.
You want that thing
to
break.
Or you're going by a rock and the paddle. Now, there was a little interview with some officials from Calgary, and they're saying, you know, it gives you a false sense of security.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, yeah, I got this leash so I can get back. Oh, yeah, but if... And what they're doing is saying, well, I can get back on my board, so I'm not wearing my life jacket. But then on the other hand, all of a sudden, your paddle board's on one side of the rock, you're going on the other.
Yeah.
And the momentum is driving you under the water because your paddle board is stuck to your leg and you have no life jacket on.
Yeah.
Right? And they're saying, like, this is an issue. People get a false sense of security.
Exactly.
Having this leash on their foot and no life jacket.
We recently talked about a woman who, she was strapped to her paddleboard, the paddleboard and her got caught under a boat or something, and she couldn't get free.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember that?
That was just
a couple months ago.
And that's what happens. I mean, it's that easy. There's an emergency trend where we look at the causes for fatalities in recent years where a person otherwise well outfitted died because their leash on the stand-up paddleboard became entangled in brush or other debris on area rivers. Oregon State Marine Board Boating Safety Brian Paulson says. Most ankle leashes used by stand-up paddleboarders are not designed for quick release. If you get tangled on rocks or down trees, the leash can make escape nearly impossible. Most stand-up paddleboards are equipped with a leash so the paddleboard can stay within reach if the user falls off. On moving water, though, the leash can be deadly. So that's the whole thing, is people are saying, well, it's on there and it says I can use it. Yeah, if you're out in flat water, if you're on the lake, or not going down fast-moving water.
Exactly.
Quick-release leashes are available and designed specifically for moving water. It's worn around the waist or can be attached to the life jacket. Leashes attached to a jacket are easier for the paddler to grab and deploy. Stand-up paddleboarding incidents and fatalities were infrequent prior to 2019. Between 2020 and 2024, there were 3 stand-up paddleboard injuries beyond first aid, 10 fatalities, where either a life jacket wasn't worn or the person became entangled in an obstruction on moving water without a quick-release leash. Tanglements do happen with life jacket straps as well. However, the chance of survival from drowning is greatly improved. It's more important for paddlers to make sure the straps on their life jackets are tucked back into the jacket itself and the slack is not allowed to dangle. Life jackets are required to be readily accessible on stand-up paddleboards. Another point to keep in mind is that if the jacket is sitting on the bow of the boat and the paddler falls off, the board can easily flow out of reach. No board and no life jacket to help the paddler in need. This is why the Marine Board advocates that all paddlers wear their life jackets. There isn't time to put one on in the emergency, the advisory states. Which, I mean, that's the thing with everything, like kayaking, yep, canoeing, the whole deal. If you go over,
yeah,
it's kind of late to put your life jacket on at that point. Just saying.
Yeah, if you whack your head.
Yep. Tom Thompson?
That's yeah, exactly. Well, there's a lot of controversy there. There's
controversy there. I just like to bring it up every so often because we know. Those who know, know.
Yeah, yeah. So the one we talked about, she was Portland, Oregon. She was a chef, Naomi Pomeroy. Unfortunately, she drowned after they were floating down the river, couple tubes, paddleboard, and she couldn't get free of her paddleboard leash.
Yep.
And so, unfortunately, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one I was mentioning earlier. But there's when I Googled it, there's dozens of stories of people using. They keep saying that the investigation determined that the wrong type of safety leash was used for conditions.
Yeah, it wasn't a quick release.
Yes. So you need a quick release. If you're going to do anything in moving water, if you're out in a pond or a lake or something, mm-hmm, or in a pool or whatever
you're
doing.
There's no current.
There's no current, then whatever. But if you're in moving water, if you're floating on a river, creek, or you're doing something, then if there's any potential to get snagged.
Sweepers and strainers.
Like, sure, you don't want to lose the paddleboard, but losing the paddleboard is a problem on a lake. If wind blows it away, but on a river, like on a lake, you don't want to lose it. So maybe not a breakaway or whatever, but if you're going to be in where there could be snags, rocks, debris, something, or if you're in a bunch of other people who are floating down the river, you don't need or you shouldn't have a non-breakaway leash. Mm-hmm. And it horrifies me to, I'm thinking now, it's like if my kids ever want to use a paddleboard, depending on the conditions, I want to buy one of those breakaway leashes.
Yeah, yeah. Belt pack inflatable life jackets are a great option for stand-up paddleboarders. It's imperative to know how to properly wear this style of life jacket.
Yes.
Life jacket buckles in the back and inflates up the front where the deployment tab is located. Stand-up paddleboards are very popular. Available in big box stores like Costco's and Walmart's and stuff, provide access to local waterways and are lots of fun, but understanding the basics is crucial. And as I said, there's been other organizations issuing the same warnings across Canada, the US, and the UK. Most suggest a quick release waist belt instead of the ankle leash.
Yes.
Right? So, yeah. And if you're with other people on the river, you know, somebody can go grab your board and somebody can go grab you.
Somebody can float down. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So
let it break away.
So, yeah, because we're like, well, how come some of these people are saying use the leash and others aren't saying don't use the leash? And then you start to filter out things and they're saying use the breakaway leash.
Exactly.
On fast moving water down rivers and streams. Don't use a regular non-breakable ankle leash.
If you haven't, can imagine if you get caught in a snag and your paddleboard is on one side of the snag, you're on the other, and it's around your ankle and it's not breakaway, this water pressure is, it's like, when they say, so in whitewater, one of the things is if you follow your canoe, kayak, whatever, and you're floating down the fast water, then they say float on your back, feet up, look at your toes above the water and whatever, right? Because if you were to try to stand and you snag an ankle in a rock, the water pressure coming behind is going to push you under the water. And you're done. It's the same thing.
It makes me want you make it wants to make you horizontal.
Exactly.
And since your foot is anchored, it's going to make you horizontal to your foot.
Exactly.
Which is at the bottom of the river.
So if your ankle is either tethered by a leash or stuck in a rock, it's the same danger. You're going to drown. It's very, very dangerous. Yep. And can you imagine trying to fight the water pressure to reach your ankle and you don't have that core strength to get to your ankle against that heavy water pressure? Like if you've ever stood in a running stream or whatever in heavy water and trying to cross a stream either on a portage or something and you think to yourself, "Ooh, don't fall." Yeah. Right? So can you imagine if you did fall and your ankle got caught?
Yeah.
Same thing with a leash. Like it's I'm going to buy a breakaway leash at first chance.
There's some parts of, you know, leading your canoe down a river.
Yes.
And you're waiting.
You watch. Have to watch those tether lines.
You really have to watch. Yeah. Yeah. Because it doesn't take much for you to go ass over teakale. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right? So.
Be careful out there, people. What you have to do is you have to assess the dangers and the risks. You have to look around all the time. You have to think ahead. you have to assess.
Mm-hmm. Make sure you stop and plan.
Stop, assess, plan, and proceed.
And proceed. SAP. Hmm. What do we got here? Oh. So, scientists have been appealing to paddleboarders and kayakers to enjoy Scotland's waters responsibly. After a third of marine mammal disturbances observed in a study were found to be caused by unmotorized craft.
Mm-hmm. It's not just motorboats that affect any wildlife. Mm-hmm. It's yahoos that try and get too close to a whale, a porpoise, a sea otter, a whatever. It's like, stop harassing the wildlife.
Yeah. Canoes, kayaks, stand-up paddleboards.
Mm-hmm.
Researchers led by Harriet Watt University carried out 400 hours of observations across five Scottish marine regions, looking at what happened when vessels were present at the same time as marine mammals such as whales, dolphins, and seals. Study which covered the Clyde, Forth and Tay, Moray Firth, Orkney Islands, and Shetland Islands areas documented hundreds of interactions between vessels and marine mammals, many of which occurred in sensitive or protected areas. Dr. Emily Haig from Harriet Watt University explained that a third of all observed disturbances were caused by non-motorized craft like kayaks, paddleboards, and rowboats. She explains, in one case, seals resting on a beach became visibly agitated as kayaks passed by, beginning to move around, and then many left the haul-out site and slid into the water, a clear disruption of their resting behavior. When I first read that, I thought nesting. I'm like, wait, seals don't nest? And some big eggs.
That we know of.
Yeah, their resting behavior. Signs of stress aren't always dramatic or obvious. It can be more subtle, such as a change in breathing rate, swimming direction, or their diving behavior. Another third of the disturbances were caused by small motorboats, with the researchers saying that in one case they saw a speedboat repeatedly pursue bottlenose dolphins, which changed direction and lengthened their dives, regrouping only after the boat left. That's just disgusting and careless.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Humans suck.
Right? Scientists appeal to all water users to follow the Scottish Marine Wildlife Watching Code in order to minimize their impact on marine mammals. The truth is that all Scotland's coastline is important habitat for marine mammals. Whether you're paddling off the coast of Fife or sailing around Skye, you're likely sharing the water with sensitive species. That's cool to see seals and whales and all that, but if they're going to come to you, let them come to you.
You can't stop them from coming to you.
Yeah. Keep on going. Have your little looky-loo.
Yeah.
But keep on going. Mm-hmm. Don't disturb them if you don't have to disturb them.
They might be curious about you, but if you're having to chase them, then it's probably because they don't want anything to do with you.
Right.
And so you're just
stressing them out.
Yeah, you're agitating the situation and creating a stress point for them.
We want people to enjoy Scotland's waters, but to do so responsibly by keeping up to date on how best to respond should you spot marine wildlife. Kayakers, paddleboarders, surfers, recreational boaters, and everyone else on the water should follow the Scottish Marine Wildlife Watching Code, which offers clear advice on how to minimize your impact on the marine mammals. With a little more awareness and a few small changes, we can all help ensure that sharing the sea doesn't come at a cost to the animals that call it home. Research, which was conducted in support with a whale and dolphin conservation, forms part of the Scottish Vessel Project led by Harriet Watt University. The project aims to capture marine vessel data around Scotland's coastline to better understand the amount of exposure to boats that whales, dolphins, and seals experience at different locations. So what exactly is the Scottish Marine Wildlife Watching Code, you may ask yourself?
Well, it did come up.
It did come up. And I think this is cool that they actually have a code for this. Like, I think in, like, Algonquin Park, when you're on a backcountry canoe trip, they should have a wildlife...
Ethics code.
Like, when it comes to... Everybody wants to see a loon and the wolves and the moose and bears. And, like, if you see them when you're paddling, here's the ethics to use. Like, don't be going up to... moose, because you're just asking for problems at that point.
Yeah.
Don't be chasing the loons around to their nest. And like, steer clear. Take a looky-loo and keep on going.
I need a selfie with this grizzly bear.
Yeah. Why make them fuzzy, cuddly looking if they're not fuzzy and cuddly looking and friendly?
If not friend, why friend-shaped?
Right?
Yeah.
Watching marine wildlife is exciting and memorable. You may spot birds, seals, and even dolphins, whales, and basking sharks from Scotland's coastline or out to sea. Wildlife watching makes us more aware of nature and improves our understanding and enjoyment of the marine environment. It is also a growing area of tourism and economy. Now, I'll be the first to say, like, when we went on a whale watching cruise and the whales came right up next to us, you know, spraying and all that sort of stuff, like, that's cool.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. When I go on a backcountry canoe trip and I happen to be passing a shoreline and come around a corner and there's a moose.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Right? But there are certain things, like, you don't be chasing and stuff like that.
You're not going to try and run them down.
No. Everybody gets excited when they see that sort of stuff, right? I mean, it's especially working in the city.
Exactly,
you see some birds. Pigeons.
Yeah.
Seagulls. Maybe you see a hawk or something like that. Or, you know, ooh, look at that size of that rat. You know, that sort of thing. But, you know, hey, we're going downtown in Toronto, and we saw 6 bears. That's not happening. We must take care not to disturb the animals we've come to see. You should follow the Scottish Marine Wildlife Watching Code, whether you're watching wildlife from the shore or at sea. The code aims to help minimize disturbance to marine wildlife, help you to enjoy watching marine wildlife, improve your chances of seeing wildlife. Because if the whales know they're getting chased every time they come to a certain area,
correct,
they're not going to come to that area anymore. Provide a standard for the wildlife watching industry. Help you stay within the law. Now, I think it's New Zealand, Australia, where they have the orcas and stuff. And even the manatees in Florida. Mm. You're not supposed to touch them.
Yes.
If they come up to you, you're not supposed.
Yeah,
that's the law.
Yes. Right. And you can get charged, not charged, but you get fined for it. I don't know if there's a charge, but there's, you can get in trouble for it.
Yeah, you'll get
regardless.
In trouble. You'll get
You're not
slapped.
Supposed to go near them. You can't help it if the animals come up to you.
Yeah.
But you're not supposed to go up to them.
Right.
You don't initiate contact.
And you don't reach over and go, hey, bitchy, 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 bitchy. Yeah. And you start, you know, scratching them if they come up. The code isn't a law or a regulation. Its main purpose is to raise awareness and offer practical guidance for responsible marine wildlife watching. NatureScot developed the code as part of its duties under the Nature Conservation Scotland Act 2004. Code was first published in 2006 and revised in 2017 in light of recent legislation. The guide to best practice for watching marine wildlife can be read with the code to provide more information about the animals you're likely to see in Scottish waters. It explains how to behave responsibly in more detail than the code itself. It also highlights the law as it applies to each species group. So if something's more, I get, endangered, or something's probably going to be a higher slap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The law protects many marine species, and harming or disturbing them may be an offense. And you got to think as well, it's not just the big animals, like the seals, the whales, the dolphins, and there's the smaller things too that are, like you say, maybe endangered and whatnot that are under the water, but you're close to shoreline, so you're going to see them. And, you know, like if there's some sort of mussel or something, you can't just go start collecting them because, you know, they're going to get slapped. The law, and the law protects you from harming and disturbing them, and maybe an offense. Going on a wildlife watching tour is a great way to see marine wildlife and to learn more about the animals. We recommend you choose a tour operator accredited with the Wildlife Safe Scheme, or WISE, W-I-S-E. Such operators will understand how to interact with the animals without causing disturbance. I think a lot of countries could probably, I mean, granted, they're out in the ocean sort of deal, but even with all the lakes and stuff like that we have, I think there's a lot of countries that could develop something like this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? Not just Scotland.
Yeah.
Because you got to protect them. And there's too many people we see. And I mean, even with social media, it's easy just to berate somebody. And I do see people asking, hey, where's the best place to see moose on? Which you're thinking to yourself, just because you have all the experience, it's not like, oh, 7 o'clock, the moose are coming out now.
Yeah.
And here's where to go see them, because they're going to be here every day at 7:04. All right. And action. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Here comes the moose.
Do you remember? It's an old Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Hello, honey. Hello, my darling.
It's the shaggy dog.
Yeah.
He's like protecting all the sheep.
Ralph.
Ralph and Leroy or something.
Yeah.
And so they punch the clock and Ralph leaves. Leroy comes in. Hey, Ralph. Hey, Leroy. And the sheep dogs surpass are identical looking.
And they're there to protect your sheep from wily coyote.
It's like the moose. They're scheduled. They moose punch the clock at 7 p.m. They're saying, it's viewing time.
It's truth. But it's easy to do that sort of, is to look at them and want to say something. But you got to be nice and say, listen, it doesn't happen that way. Here are some areas you might see them, but it is not guaranteed. And if you do happen to see them,
don't harass
them. You want to keep your distance.
Yep.
If a moose is in the water with his back to you, but no, and looks over and sees you there, but keeps on eating or whatever, he's comfortable where you
are. Leave him alone.
If he starts to turn towards you.
These are very aggressive, angry animals.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And if he starts to turn towards you, you know he's starting to get a bit stressed out.
Yeah.
You want to make sure you're leaving.
Yeah.
Back off. Keep on moving. You know, you see the loons, they dive and stuff like that. If they're on a nest, just steer. You see a loon on a nest?
Do not.
Just left turn, Clyde.
Back
get away from that nest as soon as possible. Because if they leave it or...
If they have to abandon the nest or in some sort of kerfuffle that you caused, they manage to break an egg or two, then that's your fault.
Yep. So there's... I think something like the Scottish Marine Wildlife Watching Code could be... tailored to so many different areas.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, it's just common sense.
I know. Like, it's terrible that you actually need a code because you have too many people who aren't self-aware that they're it's like, come on, what are you doing? What were you thinking? It's like, what? It's just an animal. It's like, whoa. And
it's
you're
a wild
just a person.
Animal.
So I guess I should just, you're just a person. I should be able to harass you.
Yeah. Not happening.
Yeah.
Last thing I got here, I think it's the last thing. Yeah, last thing I got. Kind of a bummer. We put up with it last year in Ontario parks.
Yeah.
There was the big uproar. Wah! Bah, 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 bah. The U.S. Forest Service is considering a price hike on recreation fees at the Boundary Waters Canoe Area. A per-person fee for overnight visitors during peak season, which runs from May to September, could rise by more than double. According to its website, the U.S. Forest Service hasn't raised rates since 2008, and in that time, wilderness ranger staffing and maintenance costs for points of entry, portages, and campsites have increased substantially.
It makes me ask, like, why? Why did you, is it a point of, hey, look at us, we're not raising our prices. It's like, you're hurting yourself by not doing so. You should, like, there's the cost of inflation. Everything should raise. Like, I'm not.
I would rather get a $2, $5 a year
this year
rather than $40.
It's up $2 this year. It's up $2 next year. It's like, whatever. So it does, things have to cost more because things cost more, right?
Ginny Nelson, owner of and manager of Spirit of the Wilderness Outfitters and Outdoor Store in Ely, was not surprised by the proposal. They haven't changed user fees for 15 plus years. So we, you know, kind of expected at some point.
Yeah, you had to see it coming.
You had, at some point it's going to raise.
Unfortunately, it's a shock price raise
it's going to raise a buck, it's going to raise $2, it's going to raise whatever. Over 15 years, you know, like every couple of years, raise it a buck.
Algonquin Park did the same thing. Yes. They sat on their butts and didn't raise prices. And suddenly, we have to really raise prices. And I was like, what? Everybody screams and yells. And
U.S. Forest Service has proposed raising the trip fee from $8 to $20 for youth and from $16 to $40 for adults.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this trip's going to cost me $6 a night. No, it's going to cost you $40. What?
Yeah.
The added funding would help maintain and enhance recreation sites like the BWCA. Money would go right back into the national forest, improving public access, safety, as well as help to preserve the unique character of the wilderness. See, I don't think that's the issue. The issue is the massive, all of a sudden, one-year jump.
Yes.
Like I say, we know where you're going to use it for. That's not the issue.
Yeah, we're not complaining about that. It's just, it's the massive price change.
Yeah, don't hammer me all at once. Hammer me every couple of years.
Yeah, let it be hidden. It's like, it's up another buck. It's up another buck. Yeah. Oh, it's up another buck.
Yeah,
whatever.
I can deal with a buck.
Yeah, I can, yeah.
It should have been done every few years or, you know, every 5 years to take a look at it. But we are where we are. And so we'll see what the comment session brings out. But I think they're going after is try to make sure that they have enough funds with the budget cuts to help maintain Boundary Waters. Which, all the budget cuts that are happening.
This is what instigated it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Those budget cuts have also cost Nelson her business time and money. With budget cuts, the Forest Service closed their Kawashiwi Ranger Station here in Ely to issuing permits, so now all outfitters that issue permits are taking over that load of permits. We're happy still to do that. We're still happy to help customers get into the Boundary Waters, but you know, it's time and money on their behalf.
Yeah.
She and a couple other area outfitters say the same rise in rates could be a good thing if it deters people from reserving and then not using an already scarce number of permits.
That would be amazing.
This is like the exact same conversation, but take out Boundary Waters
and put in
and say
Ontario Parks. Yes.
The last Wednesday of January is the first day to start booking. Was the first day to start booking permits, and so that day, within probably 10 minutes, all the day use motor permits were gone. all the permits for certain entry points like Gabbro, Mudro, Moose River North, things like that. Those permits go really fast, Nelson says. But then we see is people not using their permits and they just don't show up or cancel their permits. It's called a no-show permit. And I think of the fee is going to hopefully go to combat a little bit of those unused permits. Yeah. So, yeah, if something's costing you
it's only 16.
$40 or whatever.
If it's only $16 for my reservation, I don't make it, it was going to cost me this. But now it's a bit more painful. If it's if I don't go, it's going to cost this much.
Well, and you got 5 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5 times 40.
Yeah, exactly. It's not so easy to swallow.
Yeah.
For a no-show. And we like to sit back and it's like, hey, we're going camping this weekend. Yeah. Well, let's see what we find 5 days out.
Yeah.
And we start looking for cancellations.
Yeah.
Like something, like sandbanks or whatever. It's like unavailable. It's like, okay, well, you know what? There's bad weather this weekend. Do you want to go? Yeah. So suddenly everything's opened up because all the fair weather campers have backed out.
And then you get there and there is no bad weather.
Exactly.
Right? How many times does that happen?
And I don't mind bad weather. I don't mind hiking in the rain. I don't mind going to the beach in the rain.
We were on Bice Lake one year and it was raining. And Marco Bino and I were sitting there and we're just like, everybody's sitting under the tarp and I just,
let's get out.
Let's go fishing. And him and I went out on the lake. Now, after a while, the wind started. We didn't catch anything, but we were out in the lake. We're fishing. And then later on, the wind started picking up. So we just called it a day. But, we had our rain gear on and whatnot. And we went out for a few hours and got some paddling in and some fishing in and got back and then sat under the tarp. Where the others that we were with were just under the tarp all day long. And that just drags.
You know what I really enjoy is on the edge of some of these lakes, there's like a marsh or something with a bit of a creek that flows in or whatever. And if you're in the rain, you can paddle up these little marsh pathways between all the reeds. And with all the rain come down, you can easily sneak up and watch moose in the distance. And it's like, oh, look at that. Look at that moose over there. And I find it really nice to be out in the rain.
Yeah. Not a torrential downpour, lightning flashes and thunder booming and
me and the boys did Wabakimi a few years back, 2022. Anyways, we were on one of the days, I put my rain gear to the test. My rain jacket was soaked through. It's like, hey, I paid a lot of money for this rain jacket. Why is it getting wet? It rained so hard at some points that we kept having to pull over and empty the canoe because we were getting, we got to pull over again. There's 2 inches of water in the bottom again. It was raining.
Don't you hate, if you put a rain jacket on, but you have shorts on.
Yeah.
Because, you want your upper part, the core, to stay warm.
Yeah.
That's with me. As long as my upper part is warm, my legs don't get cold as fast. Yeah,
exactly.
But don't you hate kneeling in the canoe paddling?
Yeah.
And there's 3 inches of water.
Yeah.
Doesn't that just turn your crank?
Yeah, I'm not too happy with that.
I'm dry from the knees up.
And normally you can if there's sand in your canoe, you could brush some away.
Yeah.
But if the water is sloshing, it's every time, every slight movement, there's a pebble of sand under my knee again. There's sand again.
Yeah. It's like sandpaper. Yeah.
You can't keep it away when there's water in there.
Sandpaper without the paper.
Yeah. And then when the water sloshes side to side, it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Yeah. The balance is way off. I have a tidal wave swishing from side to side.
Yeah. The troubles we have.
Yeah.
Public comment can be submitted online in writing or via email through September 2nd. So any increases will come in next year, I would assume. U.S. Forest Service also scheduled 3 open houses, according to its website. So for more on the just Google for more information, Google Boundary Waters Fee Hike. And when I did that, the link was the first entry on the Google page.
Yeah.
And that'll take you right to the whole spiel about the fee hikes and all that. And you can get a lot more information than we've said today. But yeah, I saw this and I'm thinking, just insert Ontario Provincial Parks here.
Yep, exactly.
Take out Boundary Waters, and it's the exact same conversation. And see, with us, the big thing was it's was per...
It was?
Per party, per group. So it was like a raise to like $40 per campsite.
Yes.
Per night. So solo pass, you get four people on a site.
That was the issue.
That's $10 each.
Yeah, whatever.
You get one person solo camping.
That's 40 that's bucks. That's 40 a
bucks.
Yeah.
So if I'm on a 10-day trip, that's $400.
Yeah.
If I'm with three other people, that's a third of that.
Yeah.
Or a quarter of that.
Yeah.
Right? Because my math is good. There's a quarter of that. It's like, that doesn't make sense. My biggest gripe was at the time, you could probably get a 10-year-old to program your reservation system, because that was their one thing, is they can't do this with the reservation system, and I called BS on that.
Yeah, exactly.
You get a 10-year-old to program that. Yeah. Are you solo? Here's your rate.
Yeah.
If you're in a group, here's your rate.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, that's not a problem. So Boundary Waters, if you don't want to... Boundary Waters is always fighting something.
And so of all the... Well, so we obviously talk often, quite often, of a few areas. One is like the Colorado River. We always go back to that. We always talk about Ontario Parks, Algonquin, Temagami, Killarney, and so on. But we, like, honest to goodness, it's like 4 or 5 times a year we the topic of Boundary Waters comes
up. Something's happening about that in Georgia. What's going on in Georgia? What's going on in Georgia this week?
Yeah, there's always churn with Boundary Waters. It's like, yeah. What, them again? Yeah.
Mostly, I mean, usually it's, well, it's the permits mining. Or the mining.
Yeah.
Now it's the fees. Like I say, I would not have an issue paying that fee if they didn't all of a sudden hammer it all at once.
Exactly. They jump
like,
it up.
Yeah, if they're using, if it's going back into Boundary Waters.
Yeah.
For, you know, the portages and the route, all that sort of stuff. I have no problems with that.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, a jump from 16 to 40 bucks.
It's sticker shock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what
it's
it
like
is.
It's like just, like, nickel and dime us. So we get used to that. Everything in life is nickel and diming. Like, do that with the camping fees. And if you do that, it's like, it's public perception, and you don't want to rile up the public and whatever. It's like, oh, I'm not going to camp there anymore.
Well, if you're going from 16 to 40 bucks, I'm hoping you're buying me dinner first. I get my drift.
I know.
Anyway. So, yeah, Google Boundary Waters fee hike. And click the link that comes up, and it's U.S. Forestry, and it tells you all about what exactly is going on.
And this is sort of a double whammy because the last time we talked about Boundary Waters, they were capping the number of daily entry point people. So I kind of saw this as, oh, the writing's on the wall. Like, if they're going to limit how many people can access, and it was because there was too many people going in. Since
COVID, everybody wants to go in.
Exactly. So they're capping the number of people. So if they're capping the number of people, that's fewer people. So obviously they're going to have to jump to prices.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the fact that they have budgetary constraints because there's a lot of money, federal money that's lost now for Boundary Waters. So it's, you can see where it came from. You can see why it happened.
Yeah.
But if they could only have planned ahead and said, oh, you know what, we better start raising just a little
in
bit.
Case.
We'll do 5% a year. Or, you know, just a little tiny jump and people won't even notice.
Well, if they're going $24, if that's been 15 years, even $2 a year.
Yeah, they could be making more than that now.
Right?
Anyway, Boundary Waters again.
Yep. Yep. We next week have we went out this week and met up with Ian Parrish on the old lakefront. Ian is busy finishing up. He's paddled all four, the North Canadian shoreline of four Great Lakes.
So obviously not Michigan.
Yeah. Cause that's
all US states.
So he's done Superior, he's done Huron, he's done Erie. Now he's doing Ontario, and he's going to finish that up this summer. So he happened to be
passing through.
Like 5 minutes from my house, then 5 minutes from your house.
Yeah.
So we met up with him, and we did a little chit chat about his journey so far. And we're going to play that next week.
Yes.
That'll be our interview with him next week. So that was a pretty cool.
As we record tonight, he is hunkered down in Cobourg.
Yeah, not far from you.
Mm-hmm.
Still not far from you.
Still, yep.
Excellent.
He's doing about 40 clicks a day.
That's not too shabby, eh?
He's doing some pretty good time.
Yeah. Well, and it's whenever their storms haven't been hitting, the winds tend to be hitting them from the back.
Yes, pushing them along.
So pushing them along.
The trade winds, yeah. Yeah. Typical winds.
Yeah, so if you had himself a nice
he had a nice
sail.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He'd be done by now.
Yeah, why didn't he?
He would have been there 3 weeks last Friday.
That's complicated, though. That could get you blown over. I like fun. Peter Frank. He does that a lot. He's a lot of his videos that he's posting. It's he's got his little sail up. I noticed he's changed it out a couple times. So I don't know if it became damaged or he's got a new model. He's trying something new, but he gets some really good assists with the wind on his journey from Canada, Gulf of Mexico, back to Canada again.
Yep. We used the sail on the canoe last year. On our canoe.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's just one of those round ones that you throw up in the wind. And the speed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We were on Obabaka, and we came onto the top of Obabaka. And, you know, it should have taken us like 20 minutes to get where we were going. 5 minutes later, we're there. It's like, holy, and I'm just steering this thing. Yeah, the wind's coming from behind. There's some nice waves going, and we're like riding the tops of these waves at points. And Tracy's just hanging on to the
hanging on for your life,
the sail there, the two ropes there, and just clipped onto the front. And we were just boogieing.
Yeah,
it's like, wow, that was an easy paddle down Obabaka. But mind you, I've tried it before. There was a nice breeze, and we've thrown it up, and just it's just not quite enough breeze to keep that going. Right, a little bit of an assist, but if you can get some good breeze behind you, and it just rips you, you just steer with your paddle. You don't have to paddle. Sit back, enjoy the day, enjoy the ride. That's exactly it.
I can think of a few days out on the water wishing I had a sail, but I can think of a day where passing through Wabakimi, and that we had a strong, strong tailwind. Thank goodness it was a tailwind. But just hold the paddles out into the wind, and the paddles were catching enough wind that it was pushing us along a pretty good clip.
Yeah.
With no effort at all, just holding the paddle. And the big flat-bladed paddle was just pushing us along.
That's all you need.
It's pretty wild.
Just clip that on the front and gone like a shot. Usually, however, it's people with the sails up there passing me the other way.
Yeah.
As I'm struggling through that headwind.
Headwind. This is so much work.
So, I look forward to that interview with Ian next week.
Excellent.
And you got anything else for this week?
I do not.
I don't think I do any either. I don't think so. Yeah, just, you know what? All my days anymore are work, podcasts,
I know.
Research, and Japan. Organizing stuff for Japan, right?
Should we edit out the dead air there?
No. That's not static. That's just my brain.
I wasn't sure if you're having a stroke.
No. My brain was on pause for a second there. It's like when you don't push the clutch in all the way.
Wait a sec. This isn't working.
Wait a minute. All righty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at BattlingAdventuresRadio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at BattlingAdventuresRadio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.